This is CBS Eye on the World. Johnson resigns as PM, the headline of the London Times. Boris Johnson announces that he will stand down as prime minister, says the subhead, and criticize the eccentric decision by his party to oust him. Simon Constable, who writes for Barron's, the Wall Street Journal, and other distinguished publications, is in Scotland observing this news from London. And we will attend soon enough to what does this mean for Scotland, for Nicola Sturgeon, the First Minister. But we attend to something far more critical than the fate of the political actor, Boris Johnson. And I mentioned that other political actors will be mentioned all day long in Britain. For example, Neville Chamberlain resigned on the second year and 348th day of his time in office, exactly the same day as Boris Johnson, 2 years, 348 days. However, we move to the economy that is now and tomorrow. Simon reports on commodities for me, and Boris Johnson is leaving an economy that appears in rough shape. Simon, a very good evening to you. Thank you for this. I begin with commodities because they affect us worldwide. The price of oil seems to be moderating. Has that made a distinctive difference in the cost of living in Britain? Good evening to you.
Good evening to you, John. Oh, I wish the lower price of oil would have made a difference in the UK. We have also suffered here from a falling value of the British pound. So that's been going down, which has basically more than offset the decline in the price of crude oil. So crude oil is now, for the European benchmark, which is Brent. Brent crude is now at a little less than $102 a barrel. When I go to the petrol station, as we call it, the gas station, the diesel and petrol are now about £2 a litre. So that's well in excess of $10 a gallon. So that's a lot of money. I wish it had been going down in line with crude, but our currency has sort of messed that up. But that's not good. Possibly worse, but possibly not worse, depending on whether you walk or whether you drive. The price of milk has gone up yet again. You may remember at the beginning of the year, I said at the end of the year, I'd gone in and found that milk was a pound a litre. And then the next day, January the 1st, it was a pound 20. Now it's a pound 30 as we get into the second half. So it's gone up again, but at a slightly slower rate. Not very good news at all there.
Checking on other commodities, because in the UK you pay premium prices for electricity, is my memory, and you have the troubles with that they have on the continent about electricity. How is it for the soft commodities? You've reported on wheat, on soybeans, on corn. Are they still backing off?
Yes, they are. I mean, corn is coming down really quite dramatically. It was at about $7.82 in early June, and now we're down to below $7, approaching $6.80. So that's a per bushel of corn. That's considerably down. We've got soybeans coming down too. They were about $17.50 a bushel, now down to $16.18, which is again considerably lower. A long way more to go down, I would say, to get down to around 12 for where it was last November. And then we've got wheat, which was up there approaching $13 a bushel. The actual peak, I think, was $12.74. Now, and recently, $8.26 a bushel, which is really quite a drop. And what else have we got here? That's the Brent crude figure. But yes, we've got a lot going down. What isn't going down is electricity, as you mentioned. That's not looking good. It's now 0.22 of a euro. So that's the equivalent of 22 cents per kilowatt hour, which is how electricity is measured, and that's up from 19. Back in 2012. So quite a big increase there. That's not going to be good.
The key for your economy, however, is the cost of living. And the complaints about cost of living have been driving a lot of politics, including perhaps the resignation of the PM. Is the cost of living still a dominant story each evening in the news?
Yes, it is. And there are people who are barely getting by, and it's particularly impacting food prices. There are disputes between manufacturers and packagers of food, and the big supermarket chains. And the disputes have meant that some products, staple products like baked beans, are being taken off the shelves while the two parties negotiate what price they can be sold at. These are things that people have relied on. They tend to be fairly cheap. And I know that the big supermarkets want to keep everything as cheap as possible. But at the same time, you've got the manufacturers, and they need to cover their costs. So there is a lot of tension there. There's a lot of tension with people's paychecks basically going on all on food and rent, particularly the low end of the income spectrum. And that's not good either. There are a lot of people in pain, and I'm hearing that a lot of people are going to food banks where they can get food for free from charities, and that's something that is to our shame that is happening. It seems to be unavoidable at this time because of the massive surge in prices that are still going through the process. So just because the commodity prices I've all mentioned are down, that doesn't mean that the prices within the process have come down yet. And the process is where, say, the soybeans or the wheat or whatever is taken, ground or processed, and then made into something different. That could take a little while to filter through. So not good. And we've had rail strikes too.
Yes, I mentioned from a colleague in London, there is a slowdown, job action, we call it in the U.S. sometimes. A slowdown at Heathrow coming in for bags, a slowdown at hotels for service or room service. And this, you tell me, is probably a product of the rail strike.
Yes, the rail strike is absolutely very important. You really can't get to your job in London, which is the big, it's the capital city, and it's also huge, unless you go there by train. Because if you take a car in, there's basically nowhere affordable for you to park your car. You've got to take the train, and if the train's not running, you can't get there. So a lot of people are trying to blame the lack of staff in hotels or at Heathrow or on the rails, basically on Brexit. But that's not true, really. It's because people can't get to work, and that's a big issue. And another problem with getting to work is that because of the inflation, it's becoming increasingly expensive to get to work. So a lot of people are really wanting to work from home if they can. Clearly, they can't do that if they're running a hotel. And it doesn't surprise me one bit that there is a shortage in staff for hotels all over London right now. It's going to be a summer of discontent.
A trip down memory lane to another time of discontent. The Sarbanes-Oxley bill of the early years of the 21st century. You write of it at the Wall Street Journal. The now departed Mr. Oxley and Mr. Sarbanes were a senator and a member of Congress to bring forward a bill that was going to clean up accounting and clean up the way companies reported their quarterly earnings. Has it been successful, Simon, in your measure?
It is interesting. It's been successful if you've been a consulting company or an accounting company, because you'd have got lots of work from public companies who need to comply with all the paper filing. But if you were looking at has fraud in company, is company fraud and has accounting fraud been eliminated? No, we still see examples of it. We still see fraud in business all the time. Some of it major, some of it minor, some of it trivial. But it is still there. One of the worst side effects of this whole thing has been fewer companies are now public in the US than there were in the year 2000. It's down to a level that is equivalent to the number of companies that were public in the 1970s. So in 2019, the latest data available, it was 4,266 public companies. From that coming down from 6,917 in the year 2000. And why people who are running companies don't want to incur the extra costs of going public. It's very expensive. You have to have armies of lawyers, and they don't come cheap. So that's why they're doing it.
Another thing that doesn't come cheap is Scotland. So we have a minute, Simon. What does Boris Johnson's departure mean for Nicola Sturgeon? Does this change the thinking about independence?
Oh, no, it doesn't change their thinking about independence. They still want their independence in Scotland, where I am. That's what the Scottish nationalists want. Is it going to mean that the next prime minister will say, yes, we'd like to give Scotland independence? No, they will not, because whoever is the next prime minister will not want to have to go to the Queen and say, guess what? We've lost Scotland as part of the United Kingdom. Who wants to have that conversation? I wouldn't. No one in their right mind would.
Was Boris Johnson
not going to happen?
Was Boris Johnson good or bad for Scotland? What's the measure? It's early days, but you get to say. We have 30 seconds.
I think he's pretty good for Scotland. A lot of Scots will tell you different, that they didn't like him and they still don't like him and they're glad he's gone. It's a matter of opinion. Mine is he was a good leader and who came a cropper in the end.
Simon Constable, writing for Barron's in the Wall Street Journal, and of memory days of Sarbanes-Oxley, when that's all we had to worry about in the early 21st century. I'm John Bash.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor,